So right. I never think of it as east-west or close to the water, because outside of the city of Marinette, the rest of Marinette County doesn't have, you know, bay frontage or water lake frontage.
Yeah, apparently it's like 60% already up Pembine Goodman.
Well, we've had a couple, when we were training up in Niagara, it was 39 degrees that night, 38.
Yeah,
winter's coming.
I just came back from vacation in North Carolina, so it was a little bit of a shock for me. I'm like, it was 102 where I was.
That's too much.
Yeah, that's quite a swing. All right, let me just.
Right, so I guess let's start, and I guess either one of you or both of you can take this, but I'm curious to know, what have you seen being a border county since Michigan has legalized marijuana, and especially, specifically, heavily advertising the availability of it throughout Wisconsin?
And I'm going to let Pat really give some detail to that. I will say that it's just happened in the last couple of months with dispensaries in Menominee. So we're still kind of waiting to see how that's going to play out. So it's hard to say with a lot of certainty this is the effect that that has had. Now up in Niagara, in Dickinson County, Michigan is right across the river. So that's had dispensaries for much longer. So I would just, I guess, preface it by saying here in Marinette, we just don't have a lot of time with dispensaries across the river yet. But I'll let Narcotics Investigator Callahan talk about what he's seen, kind of boots on the ground.
You know, the biggest impact would be from when Dickinson or Iron Mountain started their dispensaries. They were kind of the first border community that had the dispensaries up and running. And I mean, we saw a pretty significant noticeable uptick of kind of that southbound traffic, you know, residents from the Valley and Green Bay and Brown County kind of making their way up during the week, kind of outside hours of normal business travel, making it up to the dispensaries. You know, that 141 corridor within the drug unit kind of had the nickname of the Green Highway, the Green Corridor, just because it was very well known for several years now since those dispensaries opened up that was kind of the quickest access point for legal weed for, you know, close to near a million people, residents of Wisconsin. You know, we were that access point. So we definitely see a lot more, our patrol sees a lot more of those kind of traffic stops that turn into interdictions or drug seizures, just because, you know, the difference in laws and whatnot.
Is there, I guess, for each of your departments, is there a philosophical mandate on how to approach this, or whether to handle it differently today than it was or would be without legal weed right across the border?
I think for me, as the district attorney in our office and prosecuting crimes, we have been dealing with drugs like methamphetamine, heroin, now fentanyl, and that's just ravaged our community for years, probably more than 15 years. We were really hit hard with heroin, probably 2007 onward. And so that's really been a main focus. Of course, large amounts of THC coming south is also something that we look at and want to prosecute and enforce. But if it's a small amount, I mean, that's going to be treated, small amount, and I should say THC, that may be treated differently than methamphetamine or heroin. The other thing, too, is we're trying different approaches. So we have a treatment drug court for high-risk, high-need drug offenders that are residents of Marinette County. We have a mental health court for those that have, you know, a diagnosed mental health condition. Again, they have to be residents of Marinette County. We also just started a diversion program out of our office, and that was really targeted for people that are pretty new into the criminal justice system, and they have mostly drug-related offenses, trying to help them to avoid a felony conviction. So those are different approaches that we've had. But yes, there's always been a triage approach. There has to be in this line of work. And so, yes, if it's a small amount of weed, that may be treated differently than a small amount of heroin, because you're generally not going to overdose on heroin. At the same time, it's illegal in the state of Wisconsin. And we're seeing people bring large quantities south now, and that affects our populace. It affects our young people, and that's something we take seriously.
As far as the sheriff's office, is there a philosophical approach to how you target? I mean, if you know there's a green highway, you know where the dispensaries are, you know the roads that they're using.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't have, I guess, a department-wide philosophy on it. It's officer and deputy discretion, but again, it kind of comes to that triage approach. You know, our deputies are exposed to meth and fentanyl and heroin and stuff that definitely has a much larger impact on the community and then the individual user, where, you know, THC or especially small amounts or what, you know, you can determine as personal use marijuana definitely doesn't have as significant of an impact. So, you know, deputies have to take those same kind of considerations because, you know, the legal process for us to build a case that's prosecutable for our district attorney here is the same, whether it's THC or fentanyl heroin. So, you know, how many hours are you to devote to those cases with your evidence processing and evidence handling and report writing, you know, THC versus fentanyl. So it's kind of that triage approach, I think, is the primary in everyone's kind of mind these days, especially since, again, since the dispensaries really started up and running, it's pretty consistent that cars that are stopped have, you know, marijuana products, especially if they're, you know, traveling through the area, not necessarily from the area. You just see that a lot. They get stopped for, you know, infractions, whatever that might be, and then that contact, which should just be a, you know, simple traffic contact, that now turns into a drug seizure, which, you know, requires a level of work. So it's, well, this is THC. There are other avenues we can take, whether that be like a non-criminal ordinance citation or a referral or something like that, that really saves us time and reduces the impact on not only the sheriff's office, other law enforcement agencies, but then the criminal justice system as a whole.
Can you think of any other situation that's comparable to where a product or an item or a thing is legal in one state but not in the other, and it can be taken with them? I mean, there's comparisons to abortion, but that's not a thing that we're traveling across straight lines with. But is there anything else that's similar to this, where it's this high profile, legal here, not legal here, and people are now breaking a law by bringing something back?
Well, other than the example that you just gave, I'll just stick in the drug realm. Kratom, which is also known as metrogenine, that is not legal in the state of Wisconsin. That is legal right across the bridge. We've seen cases where people are high on metrogenine and they run out in the middle of traffic. They're psychotic and drive-thrus. I mean, we've seen all kinds of things like that, but that's another example of something that's illegal in Wisconsin, legal in Michigan. It's just one of those phenomena that we're having to deal with. And one of the, I think, unique features about our geography is the fact that we, here in Marinette, have the only hospital for the Marinette-Menominee area. And we are seeing psychotic episodes because of the high potency of THC, especially in the edibles. And when I was talking to one of the supervisors at the Department of Health and Human Services, she was telling me that psychotic episodes have really gone up in people over 45. They just are not handling that high potency well. And so that has affected our hospital. It's affected our law enforcement, because when they come into Wisconsin and they're high and then they get violent or non-cooperative, then our law enforcement have to go and deal with them, sometimes for hours at the hospital. Then if they, which has happened, attack nurses or officers, then they're taken to jail, then our jail has to deal with them. And so that is something that is a very present reality for us now. And that, we've seen that with THC, we've seen it with Kratom.
As far as a law enforcement approach, when you make a traffic stop, do you ask if there are any THC or any other drugs in the car? Is that a standard question if someone's being pulled over for speeding or the taillight or the other?
I wouldn't say that's a standard question. It's going to be very specific to the individual traffic stop, what the reasoning was, and some of the other factors that our law enforcement are trained to look for. So I wouldn't say that everybody is automatically questioned if they're in Marinette County, hey, do you have THC products in your vehicle? There definitely needs to be some reason to go beyond, you know, that simple traffic violation to kind of go deeper into that. So
okay. I know last April there was a stop in which a large amount of THC products were then displayed, and it was put up on the Facebook page, and mm-hmm. there were a lot of comments from that.
Sure.
What was the reaction within the sheriff's office or the DA's office about the public feedback that came from displaying that as a drug bust as opposed to fentanyl or meth or some of the others that everyone had gotten, you know, that is a drug bust?
Well, I think the primary feedback we had within the sheriff's office was that it probably wasn't clear to people that was one traffic stop. So all that product was one individual or one group of individuals. And again, the, you know, we kind of talk about that triaging mentality and if it's personal use, but now that these dispensers are open, we are seeing people that are utilizing them for the furtherance of personal gain and getting into the distribution, you know, illicit distribution over here in Wisconsin. And although, you know, I don't know the particulars of that particular case outside of, you know, the feedback we got on Facebook and anything like that, just based on my experience as a narcotics investigator and looking at that quantity, you know, I would probably assume or make the assumption that there was probably a financial gain for those individuals to make the trip up to Iron Mountain or wherever they went for that dispensary and you know, purchase that much product. You know, especially given the time frame that it was, there was probably very good sales on it, and they knew that, you know, you can definitely make a profit on that. So, I mean, as far as this dispensary impact on law enforcement for us, we see that a lot where it's not the personal use stuff. It's people facilitating, you know, the illicit drug trade through the dispensaries or through kind of this gray area that operates in Michigan right now with the grows, where you can have personal grows for personal reasons, and there's just very unclear regulations right now in Michigan and what they're allowed, what an individual is allowed to grow, how many plants and whatnot. So we see a lot of that, especially in the narcotics unit, where we see them facilitating kind of this drug trafficking organization or the furtherance of a criminal enterprise and leveraging that THC sale, that THC product. So I think off the get-go, that was kind of something that we were like, oh man, I don't think people really realize that that's not everything that we got. I mean, we had four or five other interdiction stops that day, and that was just one traffic stop. So, you know, there was a lot of feedback, but, you know, we revert to the district attorney and the laws of the state of Wisconsin and the laws of our community and what our community wants from us. And you know, as many negative comments there were positive comments. And from what we can tell, most positive comments are actually community members here and not necessarily people who were getting involved because it got spread out to Reddit and some other social medias and whatnot.
In that case, though, there was just a civil forfeiture and of the loss of the items, but there were no, I mean, could you have made a case that they were looking to sell?
And I did not handle that case myself, so okay. I can't speak to the particulars on that. I know there were a lot of items. We have to just look at what evidence that we have in making a charging decision. And I think it is important, yes, my office, we are charged with enforcing the laws. Marijuana is against the law in the state of Wisconsin in any form. So there is charging discretion that's left with our office. And again, like I said, we do have various, I guess, tools that we could use, whether it's drug court, whether it's diversion, or sometimes a forfeiture. I do believe that was treated as a county ordinance. I don't mm-hmm. remember all the particulars of that. So I couldn't speak with any authority as to the reasons that I didn't handle that case.
Okay. What would you like to see from lawmakers in Wisconsin on this? Do you think that they need to be involved? Since we have, I mean, mm-hmm. obviously you're dealing with Michigan here, but mm-hmm. Minnesota and Illinois were surrounded, mm-hmm. except for Iowa, with legal marijuana. There is a debate happening at the Capitol about whether to move to a medicinal platform or full legalization. Do you have feedback for your legislators and what would make your life easier?
From a law enforcement perspective, I think the one thing that probably takes up the most of our time is just regular patrol, not necessarily the drug unit, but just the impact on just the potency level. I mean, like the district attorney already mentioned, you know, we see a significant uptick in kind of mental health crisis issues. And when we deal with those, although, you know, we're obviously not doctors or whatnot, you know, part of our job is to kind of get a little bit of background on the individual. And, you know, we see a lot where they have no real diagnosis or no real history of mental health, but now all of a sudden they become, you know, people that we're dealing with quite often. And if they are in crisis, obviously we have steps that we have to take to ensure their safety. And, you know, unfortunately, because of how rural we are, we have one hospital that is available to us for like med clearance purposes and stuff like that. And then, you know, typically as far as, you know, getting outpatient mental health or inpatient mental health, that happens elsewhere in the state. And then we're tied up with, you know, those individuals on transporting and caring for them and making sure that they are getting the care that they need. So, you know, there's a huge impact there just from the high potency. And then the second big impact that we see a lot is just like the juvenile impact. You know, our northern school districts, Pembine, Niagara, the guys that were really close to Dickinson, I mean, the THC products, the vapes, the edibles, the gummies, they're so prevalent in our schools now. And especially at like very young ages, like it's not uncommon for us now in law enforcement to come in contact with families, be called there for a call for service, typically related to some sort of disturbance or out of control juvenile, and then learn that this individual is a pretty heavy THC user at the age of 13 or 14. And then just the impacts on them long term, and you know how they're going to integrate with society. I mean, if I had one caution to lawmakers, it would be to really look at these things. You know, there's, you know, kind of being the last of the party here is a benefit to us because we have data now that we can look at from other states and how it's happened to them. And obviously, you know, there's two sides to every story, and I'm sure someone else who's much more informed on this, who probably has a PhD or a doctorate, can say, well, no, that's not accurate. But just from, you know, a boots on the ground perspective, I definitely feel like the impact on just this, the potency is significant. And then, you know, if we were to go to a full legalization, have some sort of regulation on kind of the off the book grows, because obviously we're talking about dispensaries right now, but from the narcotics unit standpoint, right, we have more issues with this kind of gray area grow operations that aren't necessarily tied to dispensaries but are still legal or semi-legal in Michigan, and then how they further like DTOs and you know, selling high-grade Michigan marijuana down in Milwaukee and Chicago and then bringing back fentanyl, meth, and heroin to our community. I mean, I don't know that there's a way to legalize marijuana and not further, you know, kind of the illicit trade at the same time, but that's something that needs to be taken in consideration, how we can control both of those, because we definitely see an impact from that. You know, getting into any type of large-scale narcotics trafficking requires capital, you know, as silly as that seems. The issue is marijuana sale, THC sale is very cash-heavy business. You know, we have issues with, you know, banking systems and whatnot. So there are unfortunately individuals who leverage that ability to then further, you know, their trades in narcotics that have a much higher return on investment, for lack of a better term. But that definitely significantly impacts our communities.
And I think one thing I really want them to consider is the impact on adolescents, because there's lots of studies. I just read something in the New York Times from 2022 where they're talking about the adverse effects of high potency THC on the developing adolescent brain. And it does have long-term effects, increase in psychosis, depression, lots of adverse effects. And like narcotics investigator Callahan was saying, we're seeing that in our schools. But the other thing that I've seen, and I've been up here 20 years, both as a defense attorney and as a prosecutor, when you are dealing with people that have gotten into methamphetamine, heroin, they generally always start with marijuana. And it's just a very sad trend. So if the legislature is looking at this and wanting to promote the good here in Wisconsin, which I believe that they do, they need to look at laws that are going to protect our young people. And also to send a very clear message to people in the state, but also to law enforcement, to give us bright lines on how to enforce this, how to eliminate any type of like black market activity that narcotics investigator Callahan was talking about. Clarity is important, but also looking at the long-term effects on our young people.
What you just said is really fascinating, because a lot of the arguments in favor of legalization have to do with eliminating ties to stronger drug markets. That if you make it legal and accessible and through a proper channel, then no one has to go to a drug dealer that might try and upgrade, sell them on something else. But the fact that that still exists and is just as potent, and also the idea that the other argument is, well, if you create an industry, then the potency of THC is much more closely managed. You're less likely to have someone that doesn't know what they're selling you or what's in their own content. And what I'm hearing for both of you is that that's not true at all. Those problems have not been solved, at least in this situation of separating it from harder drugs or making sure that people know exactly what they're ingesting.
Yeah, I mean, I think on the commercial side, packaging and whatnot, you know, obviously it's not FDA controlled, but you get the similar kind of information when you buy a product that tells you the potency. But that, you know, that's for the conscious user, if you will. But, you know, there's also kind of this trend on how strong can we make our product, or what can we do to make this the strongest possible, most pure form of THC, you know, you can get. I mean, you look at some of the DEA statistics, you know, your standard THC was 4% Delta 9, which is the active ingredient. And then you look at, you know, current trends on some of the edibles and gummies. You know, we can go over to Michigan to Loom right now, and I can find 98.7% pure THC Delta 9 on the shelf. So, you know, there's been no studies on what is 98.7% of the active ingredient, you know, do to an individual versus, you know, 4%. I think there's a little bit of disconnect, especially with lawmakers and those who maybe, you know, tried or used marijuana, especially flower, right? We don't see a lot of flower anymore, you know, even on traffic stops and whatnot. Most of our seizures are THC vape oils, dab, you know, edibles and stuff that have a markedly higher concentration of Delta 9 than the flower product does, and that's on purpose. It's advertised that way, and that's kind of the you know, the marketing for it in those dispensaries. So, you know, I agree to some extent that having a dispensary where they clearly label that is beneficial, but we also have to be honest with the fact that everyone's always chasing the stronger stuff, you know, and those are the products that we see more than anything is the high concentration THC products, are the ones that if you're going to spend $30 for option A or option B, and option B is stronger, well, I'm going with option B. Especially, you know, I don't know, I couldn't tell you for a fact because it's illicit and well, if I'm or not, but I would argue that in Michigan, where it's not illegal, you know, the users that we interact with there are always getting the more potent product.
That's really fascinating. So as far as the, is it possible to prosecute someone for distributing or selling? I mean, if they are purchasing large amounts, or if they're purchasing from some of the gray area situations where you're talking about and bringing that back here, is it the same laws in the book will apply to them when it comes to distribution?
Right. You look at the same factors for intent to deliver as you would for any other drug. I mean, and again, that's based on the evidence that you have in your case. That could be quantity. That certainly is one factor. Statements that they make about where they were going with this, what they were doing with it, statements of other people that are with them, obviously, phone records. There are lots of things that you can use as evidence to show intent to deliver. So yes, that's evaluated just like you would if it were, you know, fentanyl or heroin. Again, the same factors.
So part of the debate that exists surrounding the legalization of marijuana has to do with, there's like the dispensaries are all promoting a wellness thing. That's what every one of them that I've talked to has said, is it's all about the, you know, the individual and their health and wellness journey. And then there's a component of social justice, that the number of, specifically in southern Wisconsin, the number of black and brown people that have been incarcerated due to connection to the drug trade. And then there's a financial aspect that talks about we should tax it and then we can take the money from it. And then there's a law enforcement component that has to do with these are the laws. How do we balance that, or how would you want the lawmakers and the public who are pressuring the lawmakers on either side to balance all those different components of this one debate?
Well, it's interesting that you brought up the social justice aspect, because Colorado, which has had legal weed since 2013, they did kind of a study to see how they were doing. And one of the things that it showed was they still had a disproportionately high arrest rate for African Americans. So that didn't change that, which was interesting to me. I would not have thought that. Again, they were trying to evaluate where the state was in doing that. So I would just say, again, when lawmakers are making policy, they need to look at what's best for the citizens of the state of Wisconsin. There could be, you know, other alternatives that they're looking for use of CBD or other things like that that may have many more medicinal purposes. That's certainly something that they should look at, study, consider. From my perspective as a prosecutor, what we're seeing with this high potency THC is really not doing a lot of people a lot of good. It's certainly not helping them be more productive or law-abiding or more present for their families. And unfortunately, you know, we still see the trend of them using THC and then going to other more nefarious drugs. So again, I think all of that needs to be considered by the legislatures, and again, especially the adolescent effects. That's really where my heart is, because we just are losing so many of our young people to just wasted years of their lives through this. So I understand the arguments of the dispensary, you know, yes, that, you know, you have a more idea of what you're getting. I understand that. That's certainly true. At the same time, it hasn't done away with other illegal grows. And right now we're seeing fentanyl pop up in just about everything, even marijuana. So there's still a risk out there. And unfortunately, people are overdosing on a pretty regular basis, not necessarily from marijuana with fentanyl in it, but that has been seen, and it is a danger that we're becoming more and more aware of. So there are a lot of risks, and so that just needs to be carefully considered.
As far as your perspective from law enforcement, how should everyone balance the different components? Because obviously they're going to look at you and say, well, you're biased. You're the sheriff's office. Is how do you feel? But do you think that those all are equal, or are there some that need to be looked at as a little more important?
You know, I understand that, you know, the dispensaries, like they have an opinion of wellness and health, and that's just not been my experience on the customer base that I come in contact with. Right, this is a recreation usage kind of scenario. You know, I'm not saying that there aren't, you know, potentially people that can benefit from some sort of THC, but again, have they you know, research other alternatives, or some of the CBD alternatives, or some of the, you know, the kind of the pharmaceutical THC products that exist, or is this kind of a recreational type usage for them? So, you know, from that perspective, I get that they have to take a stance on it. I don't know if I agree with it 100% from my personal experience. And then as far as everything else goes, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to impact us, you know, one way or the other. And you know, right now with it being illegal in Wisconsin, you know, we do have a little bit of law enforcement and criminal justice control that we can influence, you know, certain individuals. And again, especially when you talk about younger individuals who are exposed to criminal justice system, like now we have the diversion program and drug court and stuff. So we have outlooks for them. But you know, as cliche as it is, you know, that mentality from, you know, the Reagan era of it's a gateway drug, you know, I have yet to come across, you know, a methamphetamine user or heroin user who doesn't use THC or hasn't admitted to me that they started by smoking weed when they were a teenager. You know, I don't know if you could ever prove, you know, cause and effect, but there's definitely, it seems to be, at least in my experience, a correlation to that. So, you know, one way or another, it's going to impact us, right? Right now, we have a little bit of ability to control it, but if, you know, lawmakers make decisions to go the other way, my only hope is that, again, they look at the big picture, the impact, and how we're going to control this, right? How are we going to keep prevent youth from having access to it, which right now, you know, even though it's illegal in Wisconsin, right, we have school districts within our county because of their proximity, you know, they're able to get it very easily, right? You know, if we deployed our canines up to one of those schools, I can almost guarantee you that the canine officer would locate a THC product in that school. So I'm sure that's just with, again, being surrounded by other states that are legalized and whatnot, and just kind of how in general the population, the culture has kind of mentally started to decriminalize this. I mean, we're definitely seeing a huge influx in adolescent usage or adolescents being able to obtain it. You know, interestingly enough, they changed the regulations for tobacco products to being 21 to purchase, and I believe you have to be 21 to buy THC products in Michigan, but it just seems to be, you know, equally as accessible whether you're getting a vape pen from a gas station or a vape pen from a dispensary. I wish there's a way to control that, because there is a significant impact, again, because of the potency. So I would definitely weigh that very heavily in any decision making.
Is it fair to compare any of this to alcohol? I mean, you brought up nicotine, and I'm glad you did, because that is something mm-hmm. I think it's even less common today for kids to start, a number of kids smoking versus when we were all young. But people will say, well, alcohol can do just as much damage. It's just as prevalent. It's just as accessible for kids. So is there a comparison between the accessibility of alcohol and the danger and the damage that alcohol does versus marijuana?
I think it's fair to say that those are, you know, those are equally, you know, similar issues, you know, but culturally alcohol has been part of our culture. You know, we tried once, didn't work out very well for us, with prohibition, but, I just think about the years, that it's taken to get us where we're at, you know, with Mothers Against Drug Driving and just, you know, the education related to that, where you look at, you know, drunk driving statistics of, you know, the 70s, 80s, and 90s, and just, you know, kind of the fatality rates related to that. I would say that, yeah, they're comparable in their effects on society, and you will never find a law enforcement officer that says that, oh yeah, like alcohol does not make up 80% of our job. Is, you know, if there's alcohol involved in some way, you know, when we're taking calls for service, a lot of the times alcohol is a primary factor, right? I don't know if it's exactly 80%, but you kind of understand where I'm coming from. So, you know, there's definitely a social impact on alcohol usage. The issue is, or the reality is that it's just part of our society, and it's kind of one of those, you know, the marijuana lobby will always leverage that against us, but I don't think anybody will, who's involved in criminal justice or, you know, kind of social impact, will say, alcohol doesn't have a huge impact on society and its effects and whatnot.
And generally, it's the abuse of alcohol that, you know, that we're dealing with. There are people that can be very responsible with it. And I think to contrast a little bit with the THC, I don't think we've seen like the marked increase in potency. I mean, yes, certainly distilleries have done probably more in the last few years to try to make, you know, some strong spirits. But at the same time, from like 1995, when it was about 4% THC content, to now when it's 98, that's just a marked increase in the last 28 years. And so we're just not dealing with apples and oranges, because if used responsibly, alcohol can be fine for people. But when you're talking about these edibles or other things, even a little bit can cause perfectly normal, healthy people to act in ways that they never would have otherwise. So I think that's an important distinction.
That's an interesting line, because I can hear Melissa Agard in my over my shoulder. I've got an interview with her on Friday, and she you might know she's leading the push for full legalization, and she would the statement that there can be responsible use of alcohol, and then there is obviously abuse, and then she would argue that it's the same exact, probably similar statistics for the responsible use of marijuana, and then abuse, or those that quote unquote can't handle their marijuana, same as people who can't handle alcohol. Do we have any way of knowing if those are comparable? Or is it simply because we've got societal trends and standards we've studied for hundreds of years on alcohol versus marijuana? It's largely been illegal, and where it's been legal, we don't have that as much data to know if those are similar proportionally.
And I think that's probably right. I mean, we don't have a lot of studies on that at this point, but certainly just anecdotally, there are certainly accounts of people that had no idea of the potency of a product that they were getting, and all of a sudden, they're just basically on the floor, or, you know, going around acting in a manner that's just completely out of control, and that was not what was anticipated. So they just simply had no idea the potency of the product that they were getting. So yes, I'm sure time will give us more data and examples, but those anecdotal accounts, I think, do differentiate somewhat between marijuana and alcohol.
Anything else either one of you wants to add along these lines that I might have missed, or sum it up?
No, I don't have anything else to add. I mean, we
kind of covered. Yeah, no, clearly this is a subject that a lot of people are interested in, a lot of people are passionate about. I understand that. We can only speak from what we see and what we deal with as a law enforcement community. And this is what we're seeing. And I know that the men and women in Madison want to do the right thing for the state of Wisconsin. We would just urge them to consider these facts that we are dealing with.
All right. Can I get you each to say and spell your name, give your title, just so I have it correct on tape?
Patrick Callahan, Callahan, narcotics investigator for Marinette County Sheriff's Office.
Deshaw, spelled D-E, capital S-H-E-A, Morrow, M-O-R-R-O-W, district attorney for Marinette County.
Thank you both so very much. I really appreciate it. Can we get a little bit of B-roll of maybe you guys chatting out in the office
sure.
or something like that?
Sure.
It's awkward, but otherwise I'm going to have the shot of you guys sitting down there.